Quote Steve Denfer in Gadget regarding the possibly confirmed Asus-branded Xbox handheld.
It is not known yet what the Xbox button will do, but Microsoft is expected to add features like Xbox Game Bar, Play Anywhere functionality, and Game Pass Ultimate. It could go even deeper, possibly launching the Xbox app on Windows, according to Video Cards.
It's true, it is not known yet, but if you've ever used an Xbox or even an Xbox controller on Windows, you can probably figure out 90% of what the button will do or logically lead to. This is the Fluffy Paragraph, and now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you more about this FCC filing and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio. We're back once again tonight, May the 11th, 2025, episode number 1046 of our program. We are, of course, here live to talk about video games, the week in gaming news, gaming culture, gaming lifestyle, all that good stuff. My name is Rob Roberts. I'm here with you every week with my co-hosts. Say hello to the one and only Dark Soccer, or Jamie Summers.
Hi.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
Ask later.
Okay. I know you're looking forward to the pinball show next week. You and I were talking about that a little bit earlier. I was like, ooh, maybe I can actually go this year. I've real always wanted to go.
I am. I'm just trying to figure out how to make ballet rehearsal work on Sunday because I do not know that dance, and I kind of don't want to, part of me doesn't want to do it, but I committed.
Pinball's always pretty fun. Those machines are calling your name, but I get it. I get it. It's hard when you say like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this thing. It's, yeah, you want to stay true to it and all that good stuff. I understand.
It's, I think at the end of it, I think is just outside of my, my skill level. Mm. And so I'm having just that. And I kind of feel like I've asked for help and I'm not really getting it. So. Ooh. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And I know you know this. Don't overdo it. Don't, you know that. Listen to your body and all that good stuff. Not joining us tonight. Techmaster Loki is not here tonight. Techmaster Loki is, I guess the kiddos have like a music recital and all that good stuff. Probably some things to do with Mrs. Loki as well. So hope everybody is at the Loki fam and the Broccoli Farm are doing incredible tonight. And all the folks that identify as a mother in whatever way that is, I hope you all are having a wonderful Mother's Day. And that includes Mother Monster, Lady Gaga. I want to wish Lady Gaga a very happy Mother's Day as well. I guess we'll get right into the gaming news. I do want to mention, of course, we do tape live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific at the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com. That's also twitch.tv/VOG network. That's the Twitch channel to follow and where we actually broadcast live. And we are on the air right after the Bobby Blackwolf show, who was on tonight and, passed on his technical fail issues to us tonight because we're on take number three, but hey, things happen. Let's get into game news. We're going to start off with this tonight. Let's talk about a story from Nintendo. You know, Nintendo has been very, we'll say aggressive when it comes to the legal things around, right? Something we're not talking about tonight on this show roll, but was also in the news was about how Palworld has confirmed that they made adjustments to their game based on some of the things that happened in the Nintendo lawsuit. And I don't know if they're ultimately trying to settle out of court or what's going on there, but I digress. We know that Nintendo has always been a pretty litigious company, especially, you know, out of the big three. One could also argue they have some of the biggest intellectual properties out there to protect. I say as I sit here and I'm wearing a Bowser hat and Dark Sakura's VTuber is on a Super Metroid inspired background, right? Nintendo creates.
I can change it.
You can, but Nintendo creates a lot of, it's more my point of like Nintendo creates a lot of these very, very memorable IPs. It's not to say Microsoft and Sony don't have those things. I mean, certainly Sony's having it big with The Last of Us, you know, God of War, all that stuff as well. Although I will say those are very adult tilted IPs. I don't know if Sony has a ton, and of course, everybody's going to say Astrobot and Sackboy. Yes, there are some family, but you know, put Astrobot and Sackboy side by side with Mario, Link, Samus. You know, it's still a different level of I think, especially if you have to look past your social media sphere. You have to look past that into what maybe people that aren't hardcore gamers but more casual gamers like. It's very hard to find somebody this day and age under the age of, I would say, 50 who hasn't played a Mario game of some sort, whether that's Mario Kart, Mario Brothers, Mario. You'd be hard pressed to find somebody under the age of 50 that's play, at least in America, Europe, Japan, you know, one of the companies that has a Nintendo distribution. You'd be hard pressed to find somebody under 50 that has never played those games. Now, The Last of Us and, you know, even Astro Boy, you know, you name it. I'd say there's certainly a lot of hardcore gamers, but does it have that same wide sense? I think we were talking last week about The Last of Us TV show and how, you know, that's bringing a lot of new eyes to that story. But a lot of people who are sort of in the know on the plot sort of had their day a couple weeks ago on the show. But my point is that Nintendo somewhat, I believe, acts overly litigious because of the strength of their IPs that we're now seeing leveraged in movies as well with the Mario movie and soon to be a Zelda movie that they really have to protect. But certainly a lot of that goes to the games as well. And this is a little bit controversial. It's a new change in the Nintendo user agreement. So if you updated the Switch firmware on your Nintendo Switch, or you pretty much try to do anything involving your Nintendo account, you're going to need to accept the new user agreement. And essentially, this new user agreement, if we want to just, you know, cut all the fluff out, we're going to say it's going to brick your Switch if it's found with pirated games or mods. So some folks actually dug through and found that Nintendo said you should not, quote, bypass, modify, decrypt, defeat, tamper with, or otherwise circumvent any of the functions or protections of the Nintendo account services. If you adapt, reverse engineer, or modify a Nintendo user account, that was in the previous agreement. Now this new one is in place. If you do break those rules, Nintendo can, quote, make your applicable Nintendo device permanently unusable or whole or in part. So if
that has nothing to do though with playing anything on your own computer.
No, your computer would be different. So this is piracy on your device. No, that is because, yeah, you Nintendo can't really force you to accept a license agreement on your PC. I'm trying to think of, I mean, if you visit their website, maybe, but otherwise, and yeah, they wouldn't have access to break your computer. So you're right. It doesn't stop piracy on, like, let's say I have a great new Dolphin emulator that lets me play F-Zero GX in like 4K, even better looking than the GameCube had it. Nintendo kind of can't stop that. I mean, legally, if I was making a profit on YouTube with videos of it, they could go after me. They could go after that front with like copyright claiming my videos. If I was a ROM site distributing those F-Zero GX, you know, they could go after me there. But, you know, there's a lot of emulators that'll now use the CD-ROM or DVD-ROM in your computer, if your computer still has one, because many of them don't anymore, but you can always get a USB one, to actually read the original discs. So, you know, and that's, you know, it's hard to argue that's not a fair use of an emulator that plays the original discs. It's, you know, not piracy, right? But anyway, if you're using your Switch and you've modded it to sideload games, play pirated games, you know, I don't know if they have a way to like hack the Nintendo Switch online library with more games. I don't think that's a thing, but who knows? You know,
people figure stuff out.
People do figure stuff out, and Nintendo is basically saying they have the right to break your device. Now, I will say, and I'll admit I did it. I did it long after its life cycle, but I went back and modded my Wii console, the Nintendo Wii, to check out the Homebrew channel. And this was well before all the recent allegations against what's going on in the Homebrew channel.
Did you play Just Dance ABBA?
It actually, legitimately, yes. Because I don't believe they released that game here.
I was there for that.
I know.
Tiaro was there for that.
You were. Because that game was only released in Europe. So that was actually a big reason why I modded the Wii. Is, you know, I've always been very anti-region locking. And so I was like, all right, well, if they don't want me to be able to play this legitimately, then I'm just going to, you know, open up the Wii and play it that way. And then that brought the Homebrew channel and all the other stuff with it. So, yeah, I did mod the Nintendo Wii. But, like, did that stop me from spending dollars at Nintendo? No. Have I still supported? Did I still buy a Wii U? Yes. I mean, I don't know. Like, I realize it gets into a gray area when we talk about the ethics and all that good stuff, but I don't feel any particular moral sense of lesser because I modded my Wii well after, or well towards the end of the Wii's life cycle when the Wii U was about to come out. S200 Matt, that's a good point. S200 Matt says, I think some folks hacked their Wii to play President Cat. Oops, maybe we did have some impact when we started highlighting that game, because that caught fire beyond just this program with the whole President Cat thing. But that's, I'm actually so happy you brought that up, SSJ100, Matt, because that was my whole point. We had and why we got into it on this show. We had at that time in 2010 or whatever it was. No, I guess it was 2011, maybe towards the end of the Wii's life cycle. Although, no, President Cat was 2008. I remember because there was the Obama parody poster. So it was a 2008 election. But around that time, you would go into the store and you would just see shelves and shelves and shelves full of shovelware games. You all remember all the crap they released on the Wii? I mean, it's just the eShop shovelware crap, but printed on a disc. It was still out there, right? We saw that. And it was so frustrating that we would see all this shovelware stuff on the shelf, but nobody was willing to take a risk on the absurd concept of playing a game as a cat in a very meme-looking kind of game. Like, that's what all drew us to it, right? It was like, I want to play this fucking game where I can play as a cat. I don't need Fashion Designer 4. I don't need Match 3 Part 20, you know, Jewel Bonanza thing. I don't need these fucking games. I want this game where I can play as a fucking cat and like skateboard down the streets of the city or whatever were the mini games in that thing, which I think was one of those. Yeah. Pod Culture says, now you have Stray and Little Kitty Big City. We here at Orange Lounge Radio were just ahead of our time. We were just a Stray. You're welcome for Stray. We're going to take credit. I'm kidding. Anyway. Really? I didn't know that, DJ Rama. DJ Rama S in chat says Zenkai Con 2008 actually had President Cat in the game room. And you're going to look me dead ass in the eye and say that that game didn't sell any copies. You're going to dead ass look me in the eye and say that game didn't sell any copies. Well, maybe that's where piracy got the game over here in the U.S. But that was never endorsed. That was never the point. The point was to get that game released in the U.S., which unfortunately never happened. But we did get the attention of the nice social media staff on Twitter. I remember those. Back when Twitter was fun.
We have no idea what's going on here, but thank you.
I remember that response. We have no idea why this is happening, but thank you. Back when Twitter was fun. Remember those days? Oh, boy.
No, back when Twitter was.
Yeah, that's true, too. Back when Twitter was. All right. Anyway, we know that Nintendo has always had a very strong anti-piracy stance. We all know what happened about Yuzu and when Nintendo has gone after them. And, you know, there was Ryujinx and all this stuff. And Nintendo really tries to, you know, whack-a-mole with these emulators as they come up. And so forth. So, you know, I can't say I'm surprised to see it, to be honest. My concern is what's going to happen when somebody hits a false positive. You just know that's coming. Somebody's system is going to get bricked and cue the 90-minute YouTube they're going to make that says, Nintendo illegally banned me. Nintendo illegally banned me. And here's the list of all the things I never did wrong. And then it will come out like 3 years later that they did indeed sideload something and just didn't think they'd get caught. But, you know, in fairness, there could be the false flag that comes out somewhere because we don't know how this detection system is going to work.
I doubt that.
I kind of doubt it, too. I think what Nintendo needs is because here's what I worry about. A lot of times today, you'll hear that people get banned from, I don't know, Pokemon Go or EA Online or whatever. People get banned and they have like no recourse to figure out why they were banned or how to appeal that ban because companies don't like to share the reason why people were banned. And I'm assuming that's because, I don't know, they don't want other people to, I don't know what the reason is or thought behind it, but they don't like to share those types of things. So my concern is, if, and I'm with you, Jamie, that I don't think this is going to happen, but if it happens even once to somebody who didn't deserve it, that person has the right to be able to go to Nintendo and say, you bricked this shit when you shouldn't have, unbrick it. And there should be that process set up. And I just know, I already know, that's not going to be a thing. It's not going to be a thing. Nintendo's not going to have a system set up like that. Now, I guess that would mean cue the lawsuit eventually.
Unless they want to have their ass handed to them at some point. Yeah. But even so, there's not going to be any recourse. Complain all you want on the internet. Nintendo will give a shit.
Yeah, or talk to our AI support bot. That'll be the recourse. Talk to our AI support bot who will just keep parroting the same like five. Have you turned it off and on again? Have you now do me a favor, turn it off again and wait for 30 seconds and then turn it on again. DJ Rama S says if they brick it, there's a way to recover. You know, that's another thing I'm curious about is wouldn't the piracy community and the hacking modding community, wouldn't they be the ones to come up with a here's how to unbrick your Switch? So you've been bricked. Here's how to unbrick it.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I truly think all it's going to be is that you just have to go through a system restore that removes any sideloaded whatever. Your account gets restored. End of story.
Like a factory reset by pushing different buttons?
Yeah.
I had to do that to my Evercade when I first got it. I don't know if you remember, but when I got my Evercade.
Any device can be factory reset.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that to any phone, your computer. If it's got an OS on it, it can be restored.
Do you think that Nintendo could go the lengths of like the MAC address of the device, banning it from online? So even if you did factory reset it, you can't do anything with it? Offline?
I don't think that's going to be necessary. And besides that, there's ways around that too.
I guess that's true. We'll see.
And also, Ranchon, there are ways around a boot loop.
I do feel like it's a giant game of chess between Nintendo and the hacking and piracy communities. And I want to make clear, I don't endorse piracy of new games. I think games that are no longer available at retail, there ought to be some sort of way to preserve those games. And I think we need to kind of find that medium as an industry with that. But I don't support the piracy of current games. But I do understand the desire of, hey, someday Nintendo's going to pull the Switch store, just like they did the Wii store and just like they did the Wii U store. But I will still want to be able to experience the games of that time, especially the ones that I own. So anyway, we'll see legally how this goes and what systems actually get bricked.
There may just not even be anything to worry about.
Yeah, that's true. It may that just because it's in the end user license agreement doesn't mean Nintendo's going to do it. It just means they want that ability to do it. Although an end user license agreement has, I don't believe, ever been looked at in court, and because these things always settle. So it's funny we kind of say, I think Nintendo could have a court case coming. Would they or would they just settle? Like, because that's what always happens is they settle. Be very interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, let's talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week, hopefully ethically and sourced by a store or otherwise.
No, I've just been, playing from some dark dungeon where I have like 50,000 old CRT monitors from all the systems I've been hacking through time.
I want to visit this dark dungeon. That sounds fucking rad. Ironically, I think there is a game called Dark Dungeon.
You don't want to go there. But I mean, I played, speaking of dark dungeons, I've been playing Dead by Daylight. Kind of having a, I don't know, I'm getting kind of tired of DBD. I know, blasphemy, you.
Were you interested? I don't think it's in our show role. Were you interested in anything that they announced at their anniversary update? Because they did their big meaty ninth anniversary because they finally unveiled Springtrap, right?
Springtrap. And they got what's his face from the movie,
Matthew Lillard. Yeah, does the voice.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
That was more interesting.
No, not just doing the voice. He is the face and motion capture.
Right. There's a skin that actually has him. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they left a teaser for what one of the upcoming killer chapters is, and they figured what it is, and then I promptly forgot what it was. But I want to say that polyester said something about it. I don't know, they kept making some fun jabs at him because he was there. I'll have to look at at what that is. I'll have to find that video again. But I like some of the cosmetic stuff coming out. There's going to be some very interesting things happening. I like the Witcher stuff that's happening. Mm-hmm.
The Boulay Brothers artist skin is fire. I really like what they did with
yes,
that.
Oh, yes, it is. The Huntress, I could take her, you know, take her leave. But yeah, there's I'm happy about it, you know, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, I'm also just like, I really want to see what they're doing to fix some of the things. Oh yeah, so the thing is Walking Dead.
Oh, that makes so much sense, chapter. Though. That they've been talking about that forever. Or when I say they, I mean the community rumors have been buzzing about that forever. But
they did some. He sang something at the end, and so that they've left hints in the event.
Interesting. And I'm assuming it would be Negan so as the killer.
The speculation is Walking Dead.
Okay. Interesting.
And. But I'm just going to say, I feel at least the haystacking was kept. So,
I have a question about the Dragula thing. Cause I saw some of the highlights on social media, but I didn't watch the whole presentation, but I think I watched the Boulay Brothers reveal. I watched that whole thing. Did they ever credit Asia Consent for that Huntress outfit? Because I'm almost positive the language they were using was as seen on the show, that we designed through our show, that this was on the show. And I was kind of like, why aren't you saying Asia Consent?
I was working at the same time.
Huh. I don't know. I could have missed it, but like, I swear when I watched the walk back, I was going, why aren't, and maybe they were worried that some people wouldn't get the pun. Cause you know, unfortunately on the internet there's, you know, and they were worried that people would take the name Asia Consent a little literally. Maybe they're worried about saying the name, but I thought it was a little weird that she wasn't credited, at least again, in my recollection. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Sorry. But she made that Huntress thing for a challenge. I just find
well,
it
they showed her directly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But
so, I mean, I was sort of half paying attention to some of that. Cause I was, you know, trying to get work done, but I had it on the side.
Well, anyway, the drag performer's name is Asia Consent. She's out of Portland. She's very talented. Thank you.
Yeah. Also, I don't think there's anything bad about the name. I mean.
Well, here's the problem, Jamie. Straight
it's
people.
Because people it's straight are too, people. No, but people are too focused on fucking.
And I don't.
Not everything has to be about that. This is also consent for legal agreements.
I don't mean you watching, and I don't mean you listening on the podcast feed, and people. I don't. You know, if you're an ally, you know
they
don't mean you.
They could have said it.
I know.
And on top of that, it's an 18 plus game.
Yeah, it's true.
Technically, so there's no. There would have been no problem.
You do,
saying anything.
You do
about
have to
it.
Be a certain age to consent to play the game. Anyway.
Yeah. But. I'm a little hangry, so I got the vibe tonight, and there's chicken.
I want chicken. All right.
Well, you got to come here for chicken. Anyway, so I played some Mass Effect. Got through the Novaria mission. I didn't take Liara. This is the first time I haven't taken Liara to Novaria. Well, I started off with her, and then I was like, oh, wait, I need someone who can hack. And I don't use Ashley that much. So I brought Ashley and Tally, and I was like, oh, wait, this is why I bring Liara. And I usually want to punch Ashley in the face on that mission. Even though I always kill Caden because he's Captain Cardboard, and I like Ashley better.
Disapproving stare.
In the later games, because she overcomes her xenophobia, and you never find that out if you don't let her live. And it's nice. She has a lot more personal development as a character than Caden does. That's just facts. He kind of stays the same person he is, and she actually grows out of her xenophobia, which I really enjoy seeing. And you find out more about her family and all this. But anyway, I mean, that's why I choose to let her live that. And honestly, I really do think that Caden has the personality of a wet, you know, piece of cardboard. That's me.
One could argue that him discovering his true feelings for Shepard, if things go that way, is a little bit of development, but it's fine.
That's like very minor development. Any of the characters you romance are going to discover their feelings for Shepard, because Shepard has main character syndrome. I'm a little bit of a mood. But I don't know. But I don't know. It's like I could never figure out what it was about him that just aggravated me until it finally just dawned on me in the middle of trying to explain it to somebody else last night that I just don't think he's got an engaging personality.
Well, you know, my husband only has him tattooed on himself, so I don't have any strong feelings or anything.
You know, though, I also have zero attraction to him as a character, so I'm a little bit biased that way. So, anyway. I played some Palia. I've been getting back into my modding a lot for Palia, and I'm working on my property and trying to save money so I can buy another property. But I want to use the default one because I'm trying to boundary break, because there is this wall and you can see something behind the wall, and I've broken that boundary once and I need to do it again. But I have to have 100,000 monies to do that. I've been doing Fruit Mountain. Just, you know, my Mahjong game on the go, just like the usual stuff. I don't know. I just really haven't wanted to branch out more. I've been reading, like, I went back to go read the original Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comic, and I need to find the rest of it. It goes so much differently than the show did. It's a lot darker, and I'm kind of here for it.
Nice.
So it's really good. But yeah. That's it.
My gaming week. I've, of course, still been playing a lot of Diablo 4 because that game just gives me the serotonin boost that I desire with clicking and killing the demons. I'm up to La Torment 2 in this season, which I thought climbing the Torment ladder was supposed to be harder this season. That doesn't seem to be the case so far, but I think it's really 3 and 4 that are supposed to be gated tougher. But I unlocked Torment 3 last night, so I was able to do it. You know, again, it's all about just having the right build. And there's so many websites out there dedicated to dissecting builds. I will shout out Maxroll. That's the one I use. But even in their builds, I do find things where I'm like, this doesn't add up. Or I feel like this was not changed from a previous draft where maybe their line of thinking about what skills they should take. You know, I don't want to get too far in the weeds on it, but even sometimes, and that's fine, that site prints a ton of builds and they're always updating. So it's not a read. It's just, you know, I always like to kind of go, yes, I'll use this as a blueprint, but I'll challenge the thinking sometimes. I'll be like, I'm not sure I logically get that, so I want to try doing this instead. And let me try this out in a nightmare dungeon and see if I clear it faster. So I'll do little things like that. But I love that their site sets a blueprint and gives me an idea which direction to go. So, and there's lots of sites just like it. Icy Veins is one I've used in the past too, and there's lots of other sites. So, I'm playing a Necromancer this season, and I'm doing a minion build, which is basically, it's very similar to in Diablo 3 when you would have the Witch Doctor's minion build that would just, the minions would kill everything on the screen, and you only have to focus on bosses and big things. It's very, very, very similar to that, ultimately in execution, how it plays. But I'm having a fun time with it. Like, it's just so fun tearing through all the monsters. But I did play one other game this week, very important, that I finally mentioned that I got to Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Finally started playing that this week, and I threatened last week on the show. I said, I know I'm overdue because this game's been out for 2 weeks. It's right up my alley, but just with all the traveling I've been doing stuff. Yeah, she is that bitch.
It's French.
That's my summary of Clair Obscur.
I've been watching Nick play.
Yeah, there's a lot of streamers playing that right now, including Nick. Yeah,
with the baguette.
But it's great. It's incredibly engrossing from the beginning. The prologue is very like, wow, like just kind of pulls you in, and then a sequence of events happens shortly after the prologue where I was just like, am I watching the movie Up? Why didn't anybody warn me about this? Jesus. But it's like, it's really pulls you in. And then, yeah, it's, you know, I'm not super far into it. I think I just got to the part, I have the second party member, and I think I just got to what I think is supposed to be the overworld map. We'll say that. Or I set up camp for the first time. That's where I'm at. So I'm still relatively early on, but damn, it's really engrossing. And let me tell you, if you were one of those people that was like, Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon were underrated fucking Xbox games, those games deserve better, those games always deserved a sequel, this game just got served up to you on a platter. This is it. This is it, folks. This is the game you've been waiting for. I mean, it's not a sequel to Lost Odyssey or Blue Dragon in name, but you definitely feel a lot of the inspiration from those titles and mainline Final Fantasy games, to be fair, in this game. It is very like the systems for like how to be a mage and how to be a fighter, they get really complicated, but like in a good way, in a thoughtful way where the game doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel overwhelming, but you definitely go like, shit, there's a lot of ways I could customize these characters. And of course my brain's always going to be, what's the most optimal? I need the number crunching, which is hilarious because that same site I mentioned earlier, Maxroll, has a whole section dedicated to Claire Obscure and those builds. But I went to the website to kind of start to read it, and I instantly had spoiled for me who all the playable characters were. And I was like, you know what? I should have known better. That was my bad. I'm not going to do that in the future. And I'm playing on easy mode. So how bad can I fuck it up? How bad can I fuck it up?
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Because I already own Dead Cells, and there is a 2-piece bundle.
Mm-hmm.
I can actually just get the game for like $5 cheaper.
Oh, nice. I know you're not a Game Pass person. I don't know that that's how I'm doing
the
it.
Outfits. Ugh, Game Pass.
Oh, the outfits.
I'm on a Mac.
The outfits are a nothing burger. I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, I shouldn't say a nothing burger, but it's a single player game. And some people have actually said from equipping the outfits, it takes them out of the experience. I will say very early on in the game, I don't think this is going to ruin anything. It's during the prologue. I actually found an area. So if you didn't find this, hunt around a little more. I found a little hidden area where I battled a mime. And then in defeating the mime, I got an outfit that's like a mime outfit. And I was like, yeah, okay, this is silly, but that's fine. Like, I think especially for a lot of people who are new game plussing, then it's like, okay, I'm going to take the characters the way I want. But maybe for the people that are engrossed in the story right now, you probably won't even use the outfits right out the gate. So, Questbuster does say, I love outfits. They're the best. The hairstyles are even better. I will say,
not like I can't pick it up after the fact.
And I will say, I do love the hairstyles that I did change the main character's hairstyle very soon. Yeah, SG100 Matt says this game is a love letter to JRPGs. This game is a love letter to games. Like, this game is going, I don't know, because again, I feel like we said the same thing about Baldur's Gate 3 a couple years ago, but it is hard not to feel like this game is going to be a fucking disruptor. With all of this talk right now about $80 games, with all of the talk about what AAA studios are doing wrong, I'm sorry to repeat myself from last week, but now that I've actually played the game, I can actually echo the sentiment of, this is wild that a group of people who used to be at Ubisoft, a team of 30, yes, they outsourced some of the art stuff, but a team of 30 put together this game and sold it for $50, that I swear to God, if you just took it out of France, or you probably don't even need to, you could have said this is Final Fantasy 17 and I would have believed you. I mean, sure, it probably needs chocobos, moogles, and some of those things, but it holds its fucking own against those series. Even in the brief bits I've experienced so far, and I know I've just scratched the surface, but it is itching all of those same, it is scratching all of those same itches that a Final Fantasy game scratches. So I don't see how this game does not win Game of the Year, because this game is such a fucking disruptor. Bobby in chat says, I'm struggling with the dodges and the parries. You have to be playing on easy mode. I know you, Bobby Black Wolf. It does make the timing a lot easier from what I understand, but it is tight. The parries are tight. So I would say if you can't do the parries, focus on the dodges first. And the only way the dodges, you start to, it's kind of like, you know how when you see a Final Fantasy monster enough times, you go, oh, this is a zombie. I know from prior experience, they're weak to cures. They're weak to fire. So if I use those spells on the zombies, I'll get through them. You sort of learn those things. it's very similar with their attacks. Like there'll be, there's one mob early on in the game that says this mob does a fast attack. And then this mob does a slow attack. And based on what it's telling you is it's the exact same animation every time. And you just have to, you know, as you start to see it, you start to learn how to dodge it. But I fucking love how like you can start the fight by like aiming your gun and shooting a weak point for massive damage. And they'll like, it's just, the flourish in this game is incredible. And obviously it looks great. I'm sure many of you have seen screenshots. So it just, this game, she is that bitch. She is that girl. All the hype, it's for a reason, y'all. I'm sure there's somebody out there that's going to be like, I don't like that game. Okay. Ooh, she's different. We get it. But for the game industry as a whole, this game is pretty fucking incredible. And I'm very interested to see what type of ripple effect this is going to have on the industry. My understanding is this story was already optioned for a movie. Somebody got an inside presentation on this and scooped up those movie rights because they're smart, because the story's, again, even early on, I hear it's, but I also hear the story can be very triggering. I just saw that on Blue Sky today, is that there's actually some issues. They don't, there's some pretty intense stuff, I guess, in the game. And I don't know enough about the story, but you know, it can be pretty overwhelming. But it does seem like the type of thing where that would serve itself very well as either a movie or a TV show. So somebody snatched those rights up. So this is going to be out there. Oh yeah. SH-100 Matt says Charlie Cox is the main character voice who played Daredevil. And then Ben Starr also plays a major character who I don't think I've gotten to yet. I love, what's that second character's name? Luna. She is like hot. I'm just gonna say it, she's hot. Like,
I was pretty sure I heard Jennifer English when I was watching Nick play.
It's just, yeah, great characters. I just look, if you like RPGs, I'm assuming you are already playing this game. Like, but I'm just gonna tell you, if you've been holding off, if you like these RPGs, these types of games, go fucking play this game. It is really that good. However, now I'm gonna tell you my one complaint. Cause I can't say 10 out of 10. I gotta say 9.9 out of 10. I have one major fucking complaint with this game. Anyone wanna guess? I'm gonna tell you my one complaint with the game. No fucking maps. And I know, I saw the interviews where they said they made the choice to do it for whatever editorial reason. How many times have we been told we don't want something, but really we do? In fact, isn't the mere existence of Claire Obscure a whole response to Square Enix saying you don't want a turn-based game with modern graphics? And I'm telling you, yes, we want fucking maps. Like, I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I just have a problem with like spatial awareness or spatiality. Like I actually see the lack of maps, I'm going to say it, as an accessibility issue. I think the lack of maps is an accessibility issue. And I think having maps is going to make your game more accessible. And I know some of you out there are going to say, well, then draw your own map. Okay, princess, we're not on the days.
Time to mod.
We're not on the, yes. I want a map mod. Yes to that. Here's the thing. We're not in two dimensions anymore, sweetie. It's you can't map things on graph paper like we used to do with Metroid and Kid Icarus Dungeons and stuff like that. We're past those days. Doom broke that in 1995. We're in 3D now, honey. So I can't just draw my own map. So and it looks like some folks in chat agree with me. Mish says, thank you. That's my only gripe. Fifth Dream says, yes. The lack of maps is ridiculous, and whatever their editorial reason is for it, they are wrong.
So there actually is an active request right now for a map mod.
Love it. I hope the mod community does it. I will install that 100%. Thank you modders, we salute you. Happy Modders Day to all the modders out there. All right. So yeah.
All
the modders that have come before. All right. Anyway, Hestus Geo 100 Matt saying maps like the song. They don't love you like I love you. Wait, wait on the maps. Wait, they don't love you like I love you. I love maps. All right. Anyway, enough deep references, enough Claire obscure references. Let's get into some news. Now that we're done with our gaming week, let's get into more news. We talked about Nintendo. Let's talk about Microsoft and Xbox. Leaks. We got them. We got a new Microsoft leak. It is a what the Microsoft X branded handheld is going to look like. It's actually an Asus ROG Ally 2 handheld. So these are going to be the things that are Xbox branded if these leaks are to be believed. But you're literally looking at a piece of hardware in these leaks. This is going to be a very hard thing to dispute. And I think this is very a where there's smoke, there's fire situation. We know the Xbox handhelds have been rumored for a long time. Why wouldn't this be the type of thing to announce during the Keelyverse, whether it's this summer or this winter? I think probably this summer would make a lot of sense. So an Xbox branded gaming console seems to be on the way. So apparently there are some specs for this. They have 7-inch 120 hertz displays. The Xbox version of the ROG Ally 2, because there's two different versions of this, so the Xbox branded version will have an AMD 8-core 36W Ryzen Z2 Extreme and 64 gigs of LPDDR5X memory, and then the regular specs are different. We'll say that. So the Xbox branded one looks to have just a little bit more oomph there, but we see that there's an Xbox button, and so we assume that Microsoft will add in things like the Xbox Game Bar, Play Anywhere functionality, which could be huge, playing games through the cloud on this portable device, especially from your own Xbox, like lying in bed, tapping into the Xbox downstairs on this thing, could be very interesting. We'll have to wait and see what all the details really are, but we know this is coming, and it seemed like between the Switch 2s, the Steam Decks of the world, it doesn't surprise me that Microsoft wants to get into this space too. So Rinmari68K in chat says, okay, but I'd like to know how long the battery can last. Valid question.
It's around 8 C cells.
like a Game Gear. I feel like half the, yeah. 3/4 of the weight of the Game Gear was the batteries. Even the Steam Deck, I feel, like runs through battery charge real fast. But of course, it depends on what you're playing, right? Like Tetris the Grandmaster, not a game, and I love that game, but not a game that's pushing the graphics card to its extreme, right? Whereas Claire Obscure, I guess we'll say, might be a game that's going to push the limits a little more. So the battery life is going to depend on what you're playing. That's going to be a big part of that. So anyway, I think an Xbox handheld could be really neat. I don't know if we need all of those handhelds. Like, personally, do I need a Steam Deck and a Switch 2 and a mobile phone and an Xbox? I don't know if I need that, but let's see what the case is that Microsoft's going to make on why I need to have one of those. Does it make phone calls too? Is it an N-Gage? Is it a Taco? Is it the Xbox N-Gage?
Technically, we don't need any of them.
That's true. We don't need. But, you know, let's see. Microsoft needs to create that sense of need with this, as any marketing thing is supposed to do. But we'll see. I don't know. I like, if you ask me today, I go, I don't need an Xbox handheld. What couldn't I just play on my Steam Deck? But we'll see. Let's see what happens. Anyway, Dark Sakura with some news out of PAX. PAX East was this weekend.
Oh, yes, dear it was. Lord, I'm so glad I got out of this game. Like, in the 90s and sold all of my cards. Same. And got a lot of money for them.
Same, and that's no shade. Like, my wallet is celebrating.
All my black bordered cards, my Moxes, my dual lands, my legends. Y'all know I'm talking about Magic the moment I bring up, you know, the alphas, the betas, the reserves, all those legends. Anyway, they have unveiled a new Magic the Gathering and Final Fantasy cards. And I mean, these are pretty. I don't know that I would buy them other than that they're pretty. But there are some new cards being added in for the Final Fantasy series. We've got like VV, Cloud. We have a Bahamut Summon. We have Zanarkand. We have Vanille, Squall, Tifa, Rinoa, Lightning. I mean, like, so many. We have Kane. We have Furion, the Rose Warrior. We have, you know, one of the Cids. Cecil, Chaos. Like, just so many things. So, but it's going, they're going to have some special mechanics to go along with those play styles. So there you go.
Nice. I as a Final Fantasy fan, I look at this and I go, oh, I have to have like the Balthier and Fran card. But then like I'm like, ooh, I should get back into Magic the Gathering. And then I hear my wallet screaming at me going, don't you even fucking think about it, you stupid capitalist bitch. Do not fall for this stuff. So I'm just going to pretend I never saw any of this.
Okay, I do think it's I really like the artwork they did for Terra's card because it's the Amano art. But I mean, it's still Magic, and I'm not gonna.
I know. I still almost want to get the cards just to have like in one of those display cases. Where it's like baseball cards. I'll never use them for anything.
That's
I just
how
have
they
them.
Get you, Rob.
I know.
How they
I
get
know.
You.
It is. It is. And then, yeah, my wallet will be like, how dare you? Can't you just stick to the free Pokemon cards and the trading card pocket? Which, by the way, I finally fell off that game. I'm sorry if I stopped sending you cheers or whatever they are in those. I finally fell off that game. I haven't opened it in months, so sorry. But, yeah.
Well, I never got on it, so I'm not losing.
You're, it's yeah, it's for the best. All right, let's move on to something we can all get on board with, and that is our game developers forming unions for their rights and their protections. And the developers behind the popular video game Overwatch, is it Overwatch 2 still or Overwatch? Because I noticed the media is just calling it Overwatch again. But anyway, I digress. The developers behind the Overwatch franchise have unionized. So the Blizzard, Activision Blizzard Overwatch team made a union under the CWA. That's the Communication Workers of America. It is recognized by parent company Microsoft, which, to be fair, Microsoft said when they did the acquisition, they would acknowledge unions that were formed. So they are sticking to their word, for what it's worth.
Yay!
It includes 200 developers across all disciplines of game development, design, production, QA, and all of that. So you might recall last summer, World of Warcraft unionized about 500 employees. This will be about 200 employees. So, again, in the CWA's announcement on Friday, quote, a neutral arbitrator confirmed today that an overwhelming majority of workers have either signed a union authorization card or indicated that they wanted union representation via an online portal. Unionizing is about having a seat at the table so that we can work with leadership to build better, more sustainable working conditions. So, there you go. And hopefully this means, you know, there will be care taken to any type of crunch efforts. Layoff efforts will have to be, you know, done, you know, handled with care. And hopefully they don't target the people that are doing. But when it's the whole team that's forming the union, you can't exactly lay everybody off unless you're going to be really getting rid of the game, which I believe still makes money for Microsoft, even though I know, yes, it's a little come and go with my, especially with the Marvel Rivals being the new kid in town. But I think there's still quite a bit of audience for Overwatch, especially to see how it continues to develop. SSJ100 Matt in chat says, turns out people want to be treated as humans and have some basic things at their place of work. How about that? How about that? Congrats to the game developers. Darshakra.
So let's go back to something that we're into, and that is seeing the old stuff come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're always dealing with it. You remember that there was the attempt to try to bring back Echo the Dolphin. There was a Kickstarter that kind of failed pretty bad. But Echo the Dolphin is getting a remaster, and not just the first game, but also Tides of Time is getting a remaster. And there's a note about a new third game in the works.
Hmm.
So and it was actually said something at the bottom of an Xbox Wire blog that was celebrating Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Hmm.
The He said, me and the entire original team are going to remaster the original Echo the Dolphin and Tides of Times game. Then we will make a third game with contemporary play and GPU sensibilities. And then he linked a brand new website with a countdown scheduled to end on April 25th, 2026. So there you go. We'll see what happens.
I find SSJ100 Matt's comment in chat highly relatable, saying, I never beat Echo. I would just rent it and swim around most of the time. Yes.
Yeah, same.
Actually, at a recent little gamer gathering with friends, Echo the Dolphin got brought up and played a little bit. And it was like, dang, this game was hard. Like, for a game about a fucking dolphin, this game is hard. So, as you know, a lot of games that era were.
It was freaking gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous. And, you know, everything is about memorizing the patterns at the end of the day. But it was a hard game. So, all right. Well, let's talk about the Switch 2. It's interesting that we're already talking about sales. I don't know. I found this story to be a little bit weird. I got to be honest. I'm going to explain why. So, apparently, Nintendo, I guess, may be revising some of their sales estimates on this. So, in the latest earnings report, they projected that 15 million Switch 2 units would be sold in its first year through March 2026, so its first fiscal year, if you will. But that's lower than what the analysts were predicting was 16.8 million. And what's being blamed for this is, well, you know, it's a little bit inferred, but it's all this uncertainty around the tariffs. We don't know how expensive Switch 2s are going to continue to be. I mean, yes, there's been news this weekend that apparently they're, you know, the US and China are trying to work out this situation that the US inflicted on itself, but I digress. Again, it could all end tomorrow with a simple resolution from Congress, but whatever. At least the US and China are sitting at the table trying to figure this out and hopefully bring a resolution to this. We'll see. Maybe it's as simple as China smacking us across the head and saying, stop being so ridiculous. But I don't think that would go over well. So we'll see. Anyway, of course, we know, and this is the part that's weird to me, is that we know how many Switch 2s are going to be able to be sold because of these pre-orders. So we already know how many are selling through the pre-orders because it's been limited. It's been capped. But I guess where it gets, you know, a little muddy is how many Switch 2s are there really going to be able to bring over here to the States between now, you know, what's already here and the holiday season. And I can understand that that's what's maybe muddying the waters and lowering this prediction, because already less boats are coming over here because of this whole ridiculous tariff situation. So interesting. They are saying in Japan, the company received 2.2 million applications for pre-orders, and Nintendo said that far exceeds their expectations. But Shintaro Furukawa did say that U.S. tariffs are one area the company does not have control over. Furukawa did say that Nintendo's current policy is to recognize the tariffs as a cost, but if additional tariffs necessitate a price increase in the U.S., then demand in the country is going to fall. The rising prices of daily expenses and food could also have an impact on what, you know, like Jamie said earlier, you don't need games. You need food. You need water, you know, but you don't need games. And, you know, that turns into a lot of difficult household decisions for people. So they are expecting 45 million Switch 2 games to be sold through the financial year. And if you want to put things in comparison, 150 million Switch consoles have been sold to date. And that was 17.79 million in the first 13 months. So the Switch 2 is on a similar pace, but we'll see how this tariff situation fucks everything up. Rinmari68 says, I can't wait to pay an extra $70 for my Gradius Origins Japanese version, but at least it will arrive in August instead of 2027 or whatever. If it's coming from Japan, it isn't going to be 145% or whatever. It's only, I think, 10%. It could be high. I can't make any sense of this bullshit anymore. I don't expect anyone to be able to, but I don't think it's that high. I don't think you're going to pay the price twice. It would be like 10% more. But you shouldn't have to. I don't want to sound like I'm forgiving these tariff situations, because I'm not. You shouldn't be paying any more other than the markup you would expect from a PlayAsia or whatever importer you're using for that sort of thing. So anyway, Bobby does point out, it depends if you get the game from Japan or Hong Kong. That's right. There's a lot of game distributors in Hong Kong. Thank you for reminding me. And they make it their game from Japan. Then it goes to Hong Kong. Then it comes here. So yeah, and Play Asia is stationed in Hong Kong. Thank you for reminding me. I forgot about that. So yep, that would, then you would have to pay the extra money. Yeah. Or do they still have those elaborate services where you can get something like shipped to a locker in Japan and then they'll ship what's in the locker
Rakuten,
to you?
I think.
Yeah. I thought that was a thing.
Like some of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's still shopper sites.
Yeah. Or maybe one of your close friends is planning on moving to Japan in a few months and can do all this shit for you. We'll see. All right. Anyway, let's go back to a simpler time where the only tariff you had to pay was 25 cents per game. Let's get to this segment.
That's not a tariff, Rob.
I know it's not, but forgive my transitions.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And once a month for 2025, Dark Sakura likes to pick a game that started as a video game but is now in the arcade. So Dark Sakura, what is
a console game?
Yeah, what is the
that goes to the arcade?
What is the console classic game of to arcade of the month?
Tetris.
That's one I forgot went that path, but yes, that's great. Yeah, tell us more.
Yeah. I mean, Tetris in its original conceptions was a PC game. I mean, and of course, there were all sorts of other variants, like even a version that you could play on a TI-83 graphic calculator, which I have. But I mean, this is a game that has a Guinness World Record for the most ported video game of all time. And I mean, yeah. So we had all kinds of home versions for different computers, including the Amstrad Systems, Amiga, Atari ST, Apple II, BBC Micro Acorn, Commodore 64, MSX, ZX Spectrum, you know, IBM PCs, MS-DOS, Mac OS, PC 9800, X68000. I mean, I could keep going. We had a Famicom version, of course. We had, but it wasn't, you know, we had all of these releases. By the way, that record was awarded in 2017. And the official versions are about 220 over 65 different platforms. So, yeah. So anyway, going back, I mean, we had the very original Spectrum Holobyte version that was released January 27th, 1988. So the first arcade version, there was one that came out, it was Sega's version, in December 1988. And in Japan, it was the highest grossing game of 1989. And it stayed in the highest grossing arcade conversion kits through 1995. This also led to there was a Mega Drive version being developed by Sanritsu Denki, and it was canceled. They printed less than 10 copies, but they actually did end up releasing a new version of it that came out on the Sega Genesis Mini. So there's that. And then, of course, there were other arcade versions that were released. There was the Atari Games version in 1988 as well. Moving into later on, I mean, this just opened the door for us having, you know, all sorts of arcade versions. Like in 1995, we had Tetris Plus. We've had Tetris Plus 2 in 87. Going, you know, further into Tetris the Grandmaster in 1998, 10 years after that original release. There's a version, oh my God, I kind of remember that there was a Sony Ericsson version in 1999. But I mean, I'm just going through like all the various arcade versions. We had Tetris the Absolute, the Grandmaster 2 in 2000. we had, oh yeah, there's the version I had on my phone. I had the Sony Ericsson T68M. Oh, I remember that phone. We had 2005 Tetris the Grandmaster 3 Terror Instinct. We had, I'm looking for another, the N-Gage version. Arcade Tetris Giant. We've played that one.
They have that's the one that used to have a golf land. Yeah.
Yep. There was, hold on, I'm looking for another arcade one.
The video you have playing of the OG arcade Tetris, the Atari one, is just like, I'm watching this going, fuck, I missed this version of the game. I like literally want to like fire up MAME and play this after the show, because I'm like, oh man, this version of Tetris was so good. Like just the way it was styled was just neat. Is, I don't know. Like I get that it's all about like Grandmaster and these newfangled Tetris now, but I have a special place in my heart for these, you know, oldies.
I'm laughing because there's an unofficial one called Tertis, T-E-R-T-I-S, in 1991 for the Acorn Archimedes, published by SICK. Just SICK. Published by SICK. So yeah, but back to it though. I mean, we have had a number of arcade releases, and so it does count for home console games that have been ported to arcade.
No, it absolutely counts. You know, when I was originally reading you picking this pick, I was just like, yeah, like, you know, this game, I mean, technically it was originally, like my brain goes, oh, it was originally a Game Boy game. I was like, no, it wasn't. It was originally that Russian terminal system that didn't even exist here. Like that's where the creator made it. So yeah, I played Tetris forever. I know the you know, I'm up on it now.
Hey, but, I watched that 4-hour documentary. Okay, try me.
But you know, in all seriousness, like, you know, now it's you know, you see the different divergent paths of Tetris, right? And the versions that people consider to be like the biblical versions of Tetris, the definitive versions of Tetris. And for some people, that's the Game Boy version. For some people, that's the NES version. For some people, that's
When my people were crossing the desert, the only thing they had to stay amused with was Tetris.
Yeah. But then also, like, you know, just especially like Grandmaster, like, and how, you know, and I know Rin Mari 68K is giggling at the mentions of Grandmaster, but like legit, and especially recently, now that they've actually finally released the fucking fourth game in that series and its roots to the arcade version of the game and its differences, especially when it kind of just, it's even just like the subtleness of how the pieces snap and how that all works, that kind of just makes the strategy in that game a little bit different. And like, it makes Tetris a very different experience between something like that, which is rooted in the arcade, and something like, let's say, Tetris Effect, which is like obviously an extremely modern console version of Tetris that in many ways is definitive in and of itself. So
the fun thing going back into this is that all of this started from woodblock puzzles.
Yeah.
I love doing freaking woodblock puzzles, for the record.
I know you did the long documentary, but Tetris Forever is really, really worth a playthrough or watch through, whatever you want to call it, because he actually, like, you see him working on a wood puzzle while he's talking about how the wood puzzles inspired Tetris. It's really cool. So,
I mean, I've got all kinds of apps that are just like, you know, the wood puzzle apps, you know, you have to fill the whole screen with the pieces that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Those are so much fun to me. And Tetris, you know, I used to do those when I was a kid, and I think that was really my first attraction to Tetris. Also, this person is making mistakes in this video.
Okay? It's a long play video. But anyway.
Choices were made.
But this was a great choice.
But yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. But no, I love me some Tetris. And to this day, like, I don't really enjoy the Grandmaster games that much, but I enjoy the classic NES Tetris because once I get started, I don't stop.
Yeah.
It's just like that. I'm the same way with Dr. Mario. It's just like, if I have a gradual build up to it, I just don't stop until I'm just bored.
Yeah. Rin Mari in chat. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no.
Oh, Rimari in chat says, any Tetris game where pieces instant lock, like the Nintendo and Atari versions, I can't really go back to, LOL. And I get that. And like, it's even hard to play without the hold feature now that's present in modern Tetris games.
Y'all are spoiled.
So yeah, I'm trying to think about like what I would consider the definitive Tetris to be. I love
the one that was on the Russian workstation.
To you, I guess, or whatever that is. I think for me, I consider the Game Boy version the definitive edition, but I completely understand that it's like, it's different for everybody, and you know, that the play styles are different. But I will tell you what, if Tetris Plus on the PlayStation 1 by Jalico is your definitive version of Tetris, something is wrong with you, because that version sucked ass. And that's on God.
While to me, I would probably say, just given that it was the Famicom one that I grew up with,
mm-hmm.
I mean, truly, my, you know, if I was going to be honest, I'd say the Game Boy version, because I stole my mom's. But I always was a big fan of like Blastris for a hot minute, mm-hmm. when we had our Super Scope.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go on record right now saying that one of the emotional attachments I have in Tetris is fucking Tetranet.
Oh.
Fucking Tetranet.
Core memory unlocked. No, T, that's so
all true. Of us on dial-up on AO fucking L going, hey, you want to play Tetranet? Yeah, let's play Tetranet.
And I don't know, maybe it was intended, but don't forget that Famicom and NES actually were different Tetrises. The Famicom version was much different because it had to do, and Tetris Forever gets into this. It's because
I had my friend.
But a lot of people out there may not know, without, you know, seeing the documentaries and stuff behind it, that there really was a different version in Japan of Tetris than there was in the US, and that was all the complicated licensing cartridge. Stuff. Yeah,
and I have a Tetris 2 cartridge.
Oh yeah, that's right. I don't remember how to play Tetris 2. I don't. I look at something.
So this is a Famicom cartridge.
Like, to me, I know people are gonna say, no, you're wrong. It's fine. I don't care. To me, Dr. Mario is Tetris 2, and I think because it was the most like logical feeling.
Dr. Mario.
What's that?
I love freaking Dr. Mario.
I do too. And
but that had nothing. That was nothing Tetris-y to me.
I know, but it was, well, for me, it was that same like look and feel of the pieces falling into the well, but it was like a different concept. You know, I don't know.
I mean, but like, think about this. Columns had that. Puyo Puyo had that.
I hate Columns.
You know, all that Columns, preview.
I think Columns is a terrible game. I'm sorry,
but I'm throwing it out there.
I get it. I get it.
Yoshi's Cookie. You know, Twinkle Star Sprites. Like all of those games that had a thing, Puzzle Fighter.
I do love Puzzle Fighter.
You know, just there's enough of a tweak in mechanics. I mean, Puzzle Fighter is just Puyo Puyo on incredible, colorful crack. I love Puyo Puyo.
I was gonna say the other game that I can't stand in retrospect, and this game was everywhere. People sure have sentimental attachments to it, but Klax. That game was awful.
Hey, Klax.
I don't understand how you're supposed to be successful at that game
when there was nothing else, because it was always on free play at the roller rink.
Yeah. Klax is one of those games where like I'll play it once and I'll be like, this game is fucking terrible. How are you supposed to get good at this game? And then I never play it again.
Klax is the game that you play to remind yourself of how bad Klax is.
Yes. That part.
Yeah.
Anyway. But there were a lot of bad Tetris. I mean, and even with,
and also if you use the Type C music on NES Tetris, there's a special place in hell for you.
I think just like maybe why I feel the way I do about Dr. Mario is that all of like the official Tetris sequels are just like non-starters to me. Like, I'm sorry, and I know people are going to disagree, and that's fine. But to me, Tetris 2. Didn't care for it. Hattris, bad. Facetris, bad. Wordtris, interesting, but not great.
Blastris was though just kind of fun. I have to say.
God, what was the other one? Well, Hattris, Facetris. They were just all bad. None of them were good. But anyway.
We liked the Bombtris though. That was pretty fun.
Questbuster says, where are my face?
Did you ever play Tetris Battle Gaiden?
Probably.
That's a fun one.
I think that's in Tetris Forever or Tetris Forever. Questmaster says, where are my face Tris people at? Out back by the dumpster trying to find your game. Bonds 006 says, does anyone else see Tetris falling in their sleep? No, I guess it's just me. That was the whole thing. That you remember that original Tetris Effect trailer? Go back
and Tetrominous.
Go watch the Tetris Effect trailer. It was really one of the best trailers they ever did. S2100 Matt says, we're drawing lines in the sand tonight on OLR. We sure are. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about a couple other quick items in rapid fire news. Dark Sakura, what do you have for us?
The ACA Neo Geo Selection Volume 5 and 6 has been announced for Switch. We'll be dealing for Volume 5, Aero Fighters 2, Aggressors of Dark Combat, Art of Fighting 2, Burning Fight, Cyberlip, King of Fighters 2002, Real Bout Fatal Fury, Super Sidekicks, Thrash Rally, Twinkle Star Sprites. Fucking love Twinkle Star Sprites. And then for Volume 6, Aero Fighters 3, Football Frenzy, King of Fighters 98, which is so good. Last Blade 2, yes! Okay, excuse me. Overtop, Real Bout Fatal Fury Special, Samurai Shodown 4, Amakusa's Revenge, Sengoku 3, The Ultimate 11 SNK Football Championship, Zed Blade. I want them both because like both have things I want. If I really wanted to play Last Blade 2, I could just bust out my Dreamcast.
I was going to say bust out my Neo Geo and my fat fucking cartridge.
Okay. Given that I have a Neo Geo and a bunch of fat fucking cartridges, I do not have Last Blade 2, and I would give somebody else's right arm for it.
Not yours.
Maybe their left arm too, and a couple of their metatarsals. What's your foot bones?
All right. Yeah, those sound like really impressive collections, because I have not.
Yeah, I don't know why this is ACA, but.
Oh, Arcade Archives.
I guess. Oh, Arcade Archives. Thank you. Because yeah. I was like, what?
The Affordable Care Act making video games? No, it's Arcade Archives. And you can get those piecemeal, I'm pretty sure, today. But I have to admit, I don't follow the Arcade Archives series week to week. So it's only when these big, massive collections come out that I go, oh, shit. I need to get in on that. They release some good shit on that platform. I keep forgetting, like, the original Tetris Grandmaster came out on Arcade Archives at some point. So it's like something I kind of want to go revisit now that I've been playing 4. I do play 4 on my Steam Deck. I really enjoy it. So I like that you get the extra time before the pieces snap into place. I'm with the chat comment earlier that said it's hard to go back once you've been able to have a little time to adjust the pieces before they snap. Okay. A follow-up quickly to something we talked about last week. It's the whole Yuji Horii Chrono Trigger remake thing where it's not really true, but the internet wanted it to be true so bad that they basically made it up that it was true. Anyway,
if you delude yourself long enough, you eventually believe it.
So there's a small development, I guess, in this particular story that happened. The translator response in full is the following. Yes, I want to do something. Currently, Dragon Quest has seen 3, 1, and 2 remakes. I get a lot of requests for the remake of Chrono Trigger as well, and so I'm starting to contemplate on it. That's the actual. So it's not a confirmation. It's just, you know, the requests over and over for this game to get remade is at least being acknowledged. Like, Yuji Horii sees you and wishes you'd stop calling. No, I'm kidding. But it's a possibility for sure, but we'll see. We're going to find out a little later how you all feel about remakes with not our Fugle question of the week, but kind of a newer thing we're doing during the listener roundtable. But first, we need to travel around and check out some release dates of some games coming out real soon. Let's start in Japan tonight. We're going to go in a different order tonight without Loki here. So let's start in Japan tonight. And we're going to say on May the 15th, Yasha, Legends of the Demon Blade will be out on the Nintendo Switch. That is an irregular, a limited edition, and an edition that will cover multiple languages if you need that. We also have Sokuko no Kusabi, Hiro no Kakera, Tamiyori Hime Kitan is also coming out in a regular and, you guessed it, special edition. Everdream Valley is out in Japan. A game called Mizuchi is also out in Japan. The Capcom Fighting Collection 2. This is the one with Power Stone. Listen up. That's out in Japan on May 16th. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fans from that one. So busy week over in Japan. How about the UK, Dark Sakura?
It is not a busy week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have on the 12th, we have Project Mist for PC. We have on the 15th, we have Doom the Dark Ages for Xboxes, PS5, PC. Also on the 15th, Into the Restless Ruins for Switch, Xboxes, PS5, PC. And on the 16th, Capcom Fighting Collection 2 for PlayStation, Switch, Xboxes, and PC.
All right. And America gets to go last tonight. So on the list, on the list for game releases in America, we have on the 15th of May, we have American Arcadia. It's a puzzle game for the Nintendo Switch, PlayStation, Xbox Series. Doom the Dark Ages is a pretty big release on Windows, PS5, and Xbox Series. Nubs Arena is out for window. I don't know if it's Noobs Arena, but it's Nubs to me. Shovel Knight Dig, I think some people might be looking forward to. That is out on PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. We also have Yasha Legends of the Demon Blade on Windows and Nintendo Switch and PlayStation, Xbox Series. And then also here in the States, I think a lot of you are looking forward to the Capcom Fighting Collection 2. That is out on Windows, Switch, PS4, and Xbox One, but we know that means they also play on the Xbox Series and PlayStation 5. The games included in Fighting Collection 2, if you forgot, Plasma Sword, Power Stone, Power Stone 2, Capcom vs. SNK, Project Justice, Street Fighter Alpha 3 Upper, Capcom vs. SNK 2, which honestly, that's the only fucking game I need. That is the only fucking game I need, but I'll take everything else. And then Capcom Fighting Evolution is also in there. So that's a stacked fucking collection, let me tell you. I'm still tempted to wait till it goes on sale, but we'll see. Because I know my friend will pick it up right away, and I'm like, I can go play it at his house, but we'll see. Anyway, that's the release dates from around the world. Some folks in chat, Mike Def says, I'm getting that collection on launch for Switch. Yeah, I don't blame y'all. Def says may pick it up for Steam too. Ooh, the double dipping. The double dipping. Remember when y'all made fun of me for like quadruple dipping on Mass Effect 3? What was that? PlayStation, Xbox, PC.
Yeah.
And Wii U. I had the fucking Wii U version of Mass Effect 3. I'm the one that bought it on sale.
But I modded mine to shit and back.
Yeah, you used to, I remember your old, whatever happened to your old Tumblr?
It's still there, massaffecting.tumblr.com.
Yeah. I heard Tumblr was like a renaissance thing right now.
I was actually thinking about because I misspelled it. Fucking A. There we go. Fucking A. I was about to freak the fuck out. All right, yeah. It's there.
Although, it's the last post set October 30th, 2023.
And it was about Silent Hill.
It was. But you had an N7 post in 2019. So good times.
Yeah. I mean, I still have like over 10,000 followers on it for some reason.
That's cool. All right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's time to bring it back. Who knows?
Well, let's go to a place where we don't have 10,000 followers. We have 160 about, which, hey, I'll take it. It's our blue sky over at orangeloungeradio.com because we are verified by...
We need to play like a MIDI version of Mr. Blue Sky for this segment.
I know, right? We're we're verified by domain over on Blue Sky, so you can follow us at orangeloungeradio.com. We asked a fun question this week that I want to get to, which is, for tonight's show, what's your take on video game remakes? Okay, there's been a lot of hullabaloo. I love that I was able to use that name today. around a potential Chrono Trigger remake, as I talked about during Rapid Fire News. Would you want to see this or a classic that you love remade at all? Or are these classics best remembered as only a classic? You know, people definitely feel this way about a lot of movies. So I was curious what you all think about games. Do you like to see these remakes or do you get a little irritated when you hear about this stuff? So let's go through some of the answers. 13X Forever messaged us on Blue Sky, hello, and said, remakes are a great way to make old title more accessible to current audiences. Visuals, controls, gameplay, accessibility, societal norms, everything is changing and not everything ages equally well. However, Chrono Trigger had so many remakes, and the latest one is still fresh. I'm assuming referring to the relatively recent, like, iPad, and I'm sure it was on Android as well, so, like, mobile version, we'll say. He says, give me Final Fantasy Tactics or A or A2. Mm-hmm. Dr. Tsuya says, personally, I'm all for it. Considering your options these days are either the Steam release or track down one of the previous releases of the game, which could get expensive, at least as far as OG Super Nintendo goes, I would certainly not object to a new HD 2D release on modern systems. It worked out for Dragon Quest III. I'm looking forward to Dragon Quest 1 and 2, which I thought would have been out by now, to be honest. Anyway, SSJ100 Matt messaged us. I'm sorry, I skipped one. Dungeon Buster messaged us saying, one way I like looking at a solid remake is that they're kind of like reposts. They share that experience with those that might have missed out with a bit of added polish after learning something new since then. It can also be an awful feeling seeing a remake miss the mark. That's a very good point, is that not every remake gets it right. Some remakes are not great. I know not everybody loved that Secret of Mana remake. Oh, I think a better example would be the mobile Final Fantasy V and VI they did. Not the pixel remaster, but the ones before that. They weren't that great. So something to think about. Anyway, SG100 Matt says, I think remakes are a great way for folks of this generation of gamers to experience the classics, as well as us older folk get to revisit. A Chrono Trigger remake done in the style of Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD remake would be at the top of my list, but how about a Blades of Steel remake? Why do you need Konami originals? I loved Blades of Steel. Blades of Steel, and only if it has the mini version of Gradius available still at halftime, or whatever they call the third breaks in hockey. Critical Myth says, sometimes remakes...
Get in my car and go home.
Critical Myth says, sometimes remakes are a great opportunity to play something you missed on old hardware that is no longer easy to find or use. I recently played Dragon Quest III Remake, and I don't think I would have been able to play the game otherwise. I guess it's, you know, maybe the old school NES graphics can be a little grating at some point, so... Redertainment replied and said, I'm all for gaming companies going through their catalogs of IPs and seeing what hasn't been used in a while. Perhaps they could look at something that flopped and see how they can do much better, much like with Battlestar Galactica. Interesting. Maybe not necessarily remaking, because, you know, I think a lot of this are approaching this with remaking like a legendary game or a game a lot of people remember fondly. But Redertainment is suggesting, what about going back and redoing a game that sucked and giving it the attention it deserves? Interesting proposition. I like that. Fifth Dream Today says, I still fantasize, no pun intended, about getting a Final Fantasy VI remake like the one 7 has been getting. Remakes with small changes and visual updates are fun, but huge overhauls that really honor the original are great, and the original is still there to enjoy. You know, maybe I'm wrong. It doesn't happen often, but it can. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't consider the Final Fantasy VII remake a remake. It's the stuff that they've done with it is so different. And the, you know, it's like they've even changed like the kind of game that it is. It's not even like a turn-based battle. I call that a Final Fantasy VII retelling. Because that's really like the story completely retold from the ground up. It's like it's told for the stage instead of told for the screen. Or the novel instead of the original, but like it's just, it's so different to me. So it's weird when I it's not to shade the original comment, because I can completely understand why your brain is going there, because they called that game Final Fantasy VII Remake. So we're all kind of conditioned to think, oh, when they remake a Final Fantasy game, it needs to be that in depth. And I don't necessarily think that's what we're asking for a lot of these re-releases. I don't know about you all. That's not what I need for Chrono Trigger. I would actually be worried. That's how you get the bad remakes that was referenced in an earlier post, is by changing the things that people really loved. I don't know. That's my opinion. Let's go to Mish. Mishkins, who says, I wouldn't mind a remake, but I feel like at this point it'll run us $100 if it did happen. Ooh, little tongue in cheek, but you're not incorrect. You're not incorrect. Bry Guy replies to us on Blue Sky saying, I'd like to see a Star Fox Adventure remake. Need more tricky in my life. I think we just need Star Fox to make a comeback. I think we do. Let's all cross our fingers and toes and find our favorite effigy.
But do a barrel roll.
Yeah, let's all do a barrel roll. You're right. Do a barrel roll to get Star Fox on Switch 2. Ms. Coral Rose on Blue Sky responds to us saying, game budgets are unsustainable. The financial risk is killing companies and jobs. Remaking older games is a good middle ground. They're smaller, they're known quantities, and they can revive a franchise or get a niche game the audience it deserves. For me, Vagrant Story and the Xena Saga games, also a really like realistic take on, I think, you know, and this is the case for Hollywood as well. Excuse me. A lot of people bitch about the remakes and the retellings and why do we have to do these shows again? Because it's been shown that people will tend to watch them. I do feel like some of the dam is starting to break on that. And like not every revival has been doing fantastically. Like the Night Court remake just got canceled after 3 seasons, but it still lasted 3 seasons. And even I went, it was on more than one. That's surprising. And in games, I think that's, you know, we talk about $80 from this giant team to do this thing. You're right. A remake is something much smaller in scope that they can probably put out at a more affordable price. Something to think about. I think remakes are unavoidable for those reasons, as Coral points out. Fuzzer Hop on Blue Sky says, I think it all depends on how playable the game is. Some games might just need a graphical update, or others just need bug fixes or a faster sale. It's really hard to determine which games need more fixing and which games don't. It's all a matter of opinion, really. That's it. You know, I'm reading Fuzzer Hop's reply going, if they did an E.T. Atari 2600 remake, the instruction manual would be built in this time, so you would know how to play the game. Besides just playing it up on a ROM going, this is terrible, you would know that what was it, game 4 was actually the beginner mode of the game that helps you get used to the mechanics and all that, you know, all that other stuff. So it's just, it'd be interesting to going back and revisiting games that were terrible. It's interesting how many of you kind of took that angle to it. I love that, though. That's why we ask these questions. You can follow us on Blue Sky at orangeloungeradio.com. I do want to mention this as well. Dark Tetsuya said, on the President Cat Talk, I saw a YouTuber I watch regularly find a copy of the game in one of those retro game shops over in Japan. They were asking 65,780 yen. That's about $450. So I guess it became quite the collector's item. You're welcome. Damn, if I owned a copy of that game, that would be insider trading. No, it would not, because that's not a game on the stock market. But still, actually Loki owns it. But Loki even replied, isn't Loki, aren't you out at a show right now? Get off your phone. Loki says, I still have mine, not sealed though. That's right, because he opened it up. So I think he ripped it so we could all play it. But yeah. Matt says, Loki has that game, right? Yep, Loki has that game. He still has it somewhere. I don't think it would be worth $450 open, but he could probably still get a pretty penny for it. So.
Give it to me.
That is so wild. Here's my question, Dr. Zia. Did the YouTuber call it President Cat?
No, it has nothing to do with being an actual president. It's like a company president.
No, I know, but that's the tell on if it was something they got from us or if they actually translated
it. They got
the
it from
name.
Us.
Yeah, if they call it President Cat. Well, anyway. Oh, Dr. Zia says no.
That came from us.
Yeah. All right. Anyway,
you were the ones who called that game President Cat to start.
Yes, because you were talking about that loose translation, and I think I said, done. We don't need a reason. President Cat, that's a great fucking idea. You're the president. You're the president of the company. What a great name that is. And we just fucking ran with it.
I was saying it's like the leader or president, and it's a delinquent girl, you know.
And CEO Cat doesn't have the same ring to it, you know?
Yeah.
It's more, I can
Although
buy and sell
more
this company.
Alliteration.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Darkstalker, I don't think we had anything in the mailbox, but I'll check then rather than assume. Okay. Then you can always send us emails. Participate@orangelaundry.com is the place to send an email. Love that. Otherwise, that's it. I know I don't have any last minute stories, and I doubt you do either, Dark Sakura. So this is it.
I'm not doing Dead by Daylight.
Final thoughts.
Ooh. I blame you.
Ooh, what are you playing tonight?
I'm going to play Clair Obscur.
Ooh. Okay. Okay.
I'll get it started. I can't play for very long because, you know, tomorrow's a work day.
Okay. Oh, but we can see the beginning of the game, which is, I think, a lot of people who haven't seen the beginning of the game on Twitch, and maybe if they don't, you know, have the money to pick up the game or whatever, this is great. So I think there's a lot of reason for people to stay tuned tonight.
Yeah. My channel. It's right. My house.
Anyway, Darkstalker, before we let you go, let me say, of course, as always, thank you, of course, for tuning into Orange Lounge Radio and listening to us. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices to put out on air. So please leave us a nice 5-star review, a place like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. It goes an awful long way. So thank you, of course, for telling a friend about the show, because we need more voices to put out on air. We'll see you next week in 7 days. We won't see Darkstalker. You'll be at Golden State Pinball Festival. But have fun.
I will.
I'm going to try to go on Saturday. So if we have any locals that make the trek out to Lodi, I'm going to try to go on Saturday. So maybe I'll see you there too. But Darkstalker will be there. But Loki will be back next week. So,
well, and we're going to have the RV. So
that'll be fun.
There's going to be adventures in culinary delights that involve fire.
Is there air conditioning in that RV?
I'm sure there has to be. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's not ours, I'm sure there has to be.
That's all you need. DJ Rama S is
There is inside the building.
DJ Rama S is teasing in a call from Japan next Sunday. Oh, that might be fun. Because I think this show's on like Monday morning. We used to have a live listener that would like listen to us at work. Haven't seen his name in a while. I hope he's doing well. But you'll be like 8 or 9 a.m. over there while the show's on. So it's always kind of fun. So yeah, by all means, if you want to call in, that would be great. Be a good week to do it, because it's just Loki and I here next week. So, because I'll be here Sunday, I'll be here back by Sunday night. I like pinball, but I'm not to the extent that Dan and Jamie do. So they'll be there the whole time. I'm fine going for one day.
Well, I'm gonna say, if you are at the show or have the ability to make it there, we are bringing a prototype of Multimorphic's newest table, Portal.
That's exciting.
It's been sitting in my garage. It's fun. It's really fun.
I want to come play it. I need to.
They'll come over. Shit.
All right. I will let you go so you can get your stream started, and then I'll wrap it up here all by myself.
I will wait on purpose to start the game when people are there, okay?
All right.
Okay.
All right. Have a good
later,
stream.
Taters.
Have a good stream, Jamie.
Bye.
And that leaves me all by myself. All by myself. All right. I guess I'll put myself front and center then. Hi, everybody. It's just me. Everybody else left me. My parents went to the store and then never came home. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening to the show tonight. Appreciate you all. I guess my final thought for tonight would be, I need to play more Clair Obscur. Thank you, Mike Deft. Yes, I am dancing on my own. You're right. Like the good Robin said, I'm dancing on my own. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Happy gaming. I know I'm going to be playing more games this week. Yes, I'm going to play more Diablo 4. And no, you can't do anything about it. Take care of each other. Have a great month. Go outside. Go outside and take a walk. Go on a stupid walk for your stupid mental health. And you can play like Pokemon or Pikmin or Ingress or whatever tickles your fancy when you go walk. Have fun, everybody. Have a great week. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.